It's the Ag Watcher Show. It's the Ag Watcher Show. It's the Ag Watcher Show.
So who am I? Your famous question, always the hard, starting with the hard questions. I'm Trevor Whittington, day job CEO of WA Farmers, weekend job, frustratingly bad farmer, trying to do a bit of cropping in the wheat belt, past job, CEO, or chief of staff off to Liberal Ministers for Agriculture, and evening job, I am a commentator, calling myself the dry farmer who writes really badly as a product of 1970s education system, primary school education. I try and scratch out a couple of thousand words every week commenting, unlike you erudite gentlemen. I bash away on the keyboard and attempt to upset someone, and usually I'm fairly successful. So that's me.
Can I just ask a question? Like you mentioned the 1970s education, but I had a Scottish education. What does erudite mean?
I don't know. I just learnt it. I've got a daughter doing law. She used it. I'm repeating it back to somebody else to see if it resonated. Obviously, it didn't.
So if anyone knows the answer who's listening, can you just send us a message?
Your daughter doing law probably refers to everyone as my learned colleague.
Well, my great fear of her doing law is that she ends up like the law students at the American universities, all madly rioting favour of Hamas in the Middle East. So if she does that, I'll be suggesting she might want to think carefully before she goes and joins them. No, she's not. She's been brought up with a good, strong right-wing dose of pragmatic economic background, right? Because otherwise the money dries up.
Right. Oh, well, let's jump into it. Trevor, you've been on a podcast a whole bunch of times. One of our few guests that have been on more than once. Mm-hmm. With the strong enough fortitude to come on more than once.
Mm-hmm. Times must be tough.
So we'll run the
same. We might need to make a little badge for those members that have been on more than once, so they can wear like a secret badge. You know, people can acknowledge that they've been a regular.
Three times episode three.
Yeah, like an Illuminati type badge.
That's it, or a secret handshake, like the Freemasons.
Yeah, I'll tell you a story about the Freemasons later. It's a boring story, actually.
First, you need the secret handshake.
Yeah, we'll work on that one. The Sixth Sense. Mm. All right, let's go through that. We're going to ask you one word, one statement. You give us the first sort of thoughts that come through your mind. Then we'll see if it's possible to continue this conversation. We have to mix up a bit, Matt, as well, because yes, obviously Trevor's been on a few times.
That's it. No, we will. We've got some different.
Make it hard for me.
Right, Matt.
I'll make it hard. I'll start with Jackie Jarvis.
Oh, fuck. Gee, I was about to do that one.
Good. Well done. Got it right today. Good announcement. We'll come back to that.
The dry weather in WA.
Not the first time. Won't be the last time. But it's tough going for some southwest growers. Well, their first time.
So I'm not going to reference Crocs because we've probably done that with you before, but I am going to reference those little gibbets that are now going into the holes in the Crocs, advertising things. I know Auction Plus has got one and a lot of the kids are doing them, the gibbets on the Crocs. What do you think of them?
Beyond my level of technology.
Live sheep export.
Long may it last.
That price discount, the numbers that are heading east at the moment of West Australian sheep.
Episode 3 did a really good summary of it the other day.
That's great. He's a good guy, Trevor. Yeah. Well said that. Birkenstocks.
you can pronounce them. I can't.
There we go. Right. Tell us. Oh, actually, we've got complaints, criticisms.
Complaints, yeah.
I've got a Kind of. It'll go into that section. There's an announcement coming out in the next week or two.
Mm.
And you heard it here first. About BEEF 2024, the expo up there. About somebody who's been nominated for...
Mm. Shortlisted.
Shortlisted for... Mm. What is it? Ash, what is it?
Red Meat Achiever 2024, I think it is. Red Meat Industry Achiever, I think that's what it is. Yeah.
It's not me, but Matt has been nominated for Red Meat Achiever of 2024.
Oh, well done, Matt. Now we watch for the big announcement.
Illustrious company. Adam Coffey is the other finalist. Adam's been on the podcast previously as well. Australia.
Stiff competition.
So we will be looking for dirt over the next couple of days to throw on.
Any dirt you've got on Adam Coffey, you send it our way so we can put it out there.
No, anyway, let's get on. That'll be enough of that. Enough of that navel gazing.
Yeah.
Trevor, what was the announcement from Jackie today?
Dry season announcement. State government, Minister for Agriculture over here, came out with $8.6 million. $4 million in loans up to $25,000, $2 million in grants up to $5,000. This should keep 400 growers happy. Then the usual array of bit of water infrastructure for standpipes, water corp standpipes, mental health support, other bits and pieces. A timely acknowledgement. From the state government, getting the balance about right of what state governments do in Western Australia in support of dry seasons. We don't call them drought over here. We haven't had a drought. We state governments, both sides of the politics, agreed back in the mid-90s that they, unlike our eastern states' counterparts, don't write large checks when the rains don't come. So this is – I'm quite surprised, actually. The minister actually has come out with even loans and grants. Which probably tells us an election due in about 12 months' time, state election. But it's probably very much aimed at the southwest corner, our traditional high rainfall area. They've had their driest summer in 51 years, and these guys are not geared up, unlike the Northern Wheat Belt, which got a thumping drought last year. They're just not geared up for water and dams.
And the southwest is obviously where most of the sheep are.
Absolutely.
Or a big chunk of the sheep.
Even more of this, that's the Great Southern. Our southwest, draw the line from, there was a community meeting down near Bridgetown. So draw a line between Perth and Albany, that really high, 700-800 plus millimetre rainfall stuff, where the dairies are and the vineyards.
So that's the area going to hit the most at the moment, is it?
Well, it is their driest summer period. And they do get summer rainfall a little bit. And combined with a low grain production year, low hay production year, 13 million tonnes plus more, half the previous year. And hay prices are right up, 500, 550 a tonne.
Even if you could pay the pricing, is there any available as well? What's the supply like?
What's happened is two things have happened. CBH over here has opened up the grain receivables. Mm-hmm. There's 2.5 million tonnes of their 10 million, whatever they handled, which they haven't sold, allocated. So if you want to go buy some of that, buy it back, buy it, knock yourself out, you'll pay for it though. The second thing is the big hay exporters have sort of switched to supplying their contracts more out of the eastern states. Most of them have got eastern states supply depots. And they're cleaning out older hay, high rye grass levels, of hay. Look, it's around and you'll pay for it. And the question is, when will the rains come again? Normally, 20th of May is the normal break, but, last 20 years we've been getting in the wheat belt, a couple of inches of summer rain, which gets people going early. And that certainly hasn't happened. So we don't have that early pick, that green bit of feed, which takes the pressure off the wheat belt guys buying more hey, they've held stuff back from last year. They didn't produce a lot. So, look, a lot of things have come together.
But that's pretty standard. Like, if you look at the droughts on the East Coast, if you're going to have a drought, hay is going to become in short supply, and it's going to be priced accordingly, just supply and demand. And that's...
The interesting thing over here is, as I mentioned earlier, the northern part of the state, you draw a line between Perth and Sydney, and you go north, the wheat belt guys up there, not a lot of stock, mostly sheep, if they've got any, mostly they don't have any. It was decile one too. They got thumped. They smoked millions.
And if they've got sheep, they've only got sheep as a side. It's not most of those guys.
Most of them are Eastern
Freeway, Eastern Highway would be
Great all, Eastern Highway, yeah.
Yeah, it would all be.
Yeah, they're all cropping, 10,000 acres plus.
Mm.
And if they've got any sheep, they've probably been wondering why they've got them for the last couple of years. But they got absolutely hammered with a drought. It was a drought. I didn't hear a peep out of them. There's nothing. And not a lot of growers, it's probably 500-700 growers, probably less. You go down to that southwest corner where you got hobby farms, peri-urban, viticulture, horticulture, lots of 200-acre properties. It's the Orange, Bathurst, it's a nice place to live.
Ballarat.
Big trees. Yeah, it's great. they haven't had a winter drought in 50 years, so they haven't seen empty dams, and it's hurting. And it's hurting big time.
We saw only a few weeks back on social media, and it's been a few of these posts and comments around digging pits and shooting livestock and that kind of stuff. And part of it obviously feeds into the lack of options for turnoff and full abattoirs and a live export industry that's about to face another moratorium in a few weeks' time. It'll start in the middle of May. What kind of insights can you provide? And obviously you're over there on the ground and your position in WA farmers. Is this fairly widespread, this kind of pressure?
Oh, I got the West Australian ring me up saying, can you give us the name of a farmer because we wanted to come out and photograph him shooting sheep? And I said, no, probably not. But good luck with that. They were disappointed. Look, it's not something industry wants to advertise, but it's happening. It's pretty widespread. When you're facing $7 or $8 transport costs to take them to the sale yards, and if they don't sell, then it's $25 disposal. So you're up for $32 straight away. And the stockies are just saying, don't put them on a truck, don't send them. So what do? You take them up the bush, you push them in a corner in a small area, and you walk around with a 22. It's not the first time it's happened. It won't be the last. It's a hell of a lot better than starving them and hanging on. And we've seen that before, and that is not a good look. And the minister, Jackie Jarvis, quite rightly came out the other day and said, look, if you they haven't got a market for them, don't starve them, destroy them. And it's happening. But, we got a lot less sheep than we had 38 million back in the 80s. We're down to 12 million now. I reckon we'll come out of this at 10 million. And at the rate they're going east. And, we've got a federal government, federal minister, nowhere to be seen. I wonder why. We got local processing works flat out, but they're still short of labour. There's no simple solution but to put them on a boat. But all the boats have been scared away.
Even the suggestion there, I think it was Jackie Jarvis again that was saying, is there any way to keep it open for a bit longer? Because realistically, if you look at the historic levels of mortality and the riskiest time to send them into that northern hemisphere summer is August, and there have been shipments that have gone even into June. A few times there was a couple of shipments got delayed and they got allowed to go as a special leave pass. I think it was 1-2 years ago. That went, and it was the lowest mortality on record, even though it went in early June. So it's not that they can't go that time of year, but there's been no movement there, has there? It's not going to be extended or kind of the period's not going to be shortened.
No, the state minister called, which was a great thing. She came out and called for that a 2-week extension, like it's happened before, and not a peep out of the federal government. They're completely paralysed in this. Murray Watt, Albanese, they've just got it wrong. They know it. They've copped a whole heap of media. They don't know what to do. Look, it is the obvious solution. Put them on a boat. And we understand the risk factors around the humidity and what went wrong in the past. And, you know, you don't have to go to the Persian Gulf. You can go to the Red Sea and you can't go through past Yemen. But there is, you know, low risk options of how to handle those stock to go up there, and it should be explored.
What about, obviously there are those numbers that are coming east as well, which are significantly up on last year. I think the stats on it were something like 250% increase in the first quarter of the year. So it's big numbers coming across this year. Still not to the level we saw in 2020, but big numbers, probably like a 2021 year. If there was some kind of a subsidy to help with the transport costs to get them across to open that up a bit more, you know, do you think that would be helpful as well?
Yeah, you guys are right. It's $35, $40 to send them east, depends how far they go. And when you can pick up, you know, stock here for, you know, $20 or $30, it adds up. 3 years ago when they were going east at the rate of knots, we were getting $150 a head for six-year-old sheep. So they were just paying an absolute premium to restock. $100,000 a month, you think about that. That's quite a lot of trucks going east. It's a pressure release valve, but that $35, $40 it's a big cost, and they want a half-decent animal to go on those trucks for that journey. We've just come out saying that now we don't want subsidies, but if the federal government's going to keep scaring away and driving uncertainty, then they can pick up the tab and come over and write a check. You know, it's better those sheep go to the eastern states than to get a bullet in the head. So, you know, Murray Watt needs to actually come out and explain what he's going to do. If Jackie Jarvis state government can put up, I don't know, $8 million, I reckon the feds could put up $8 million. That would fix most of our problems.
Yeah, it's going to be an interest because we're still a lot of water going to the bridge on that whole live export thing. Because there's still no announcement yet, which will be interesting.
Yeah, I just wrote an article about what was called Rob's Jetty here in WA. If you're an older farmer, you'd have known it. It was a big abattoir down near Fremantle, and it was set up and run by the state government, essentially nationalised the existing abattoirs back in before the First World War, and it ran up until the 1980s. And I wrote an article, if the federal government's going to have this multi-billion-dollar, you know, future made in Australia program, or maybe, and they're going to keep, they're going to replace live exports with domestic processing in WA. Well, maybe they're going to build us a clean, green, carbon-free abattoir. They seem to like wasting money. No need for it because they won't be able to find the labour. You know, we're a mining state. You know, mining turns over $300 billion. I think ag in WA turns over $8 billion. And the wages, you know, as soon as you've got anyone who can work in an abattoir, they get pinched to go and work on the mine. So we're just not going to work. We need live exports.
What about the rest of the state? Like, I know we talk about sheep in the southwest, but what about the cropping area? Is it dry as well, or is it still?
Yeah, look, still a bit the old gold, you know, Esperance area. You know, the guys driving their Porsches and cars down there—they've just done so well in the last 25 years. It's the dry soil moisture content, Cascades, bit north of Esperance, just lowest in 20 years. Yeah. But I just drove along the barrier fence, take a line from Esperance up to Kalbarri, north of Geraldton, just the other day. And there's patches that have had quite good rain, small patches out at Hyde and a couple of others. But really, it's dry, but they've all going. They've just got such big programs on the eastern wheat belt. You know, they're all doing 10,000 hectares. They can't afford to wait for the season to break. Historically, they've got half it in before it breaks.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of dust going up.
Because I was saying before you came on, that remember 2010-11, really big drought in Western Australia. That was when I first came to Australia. So I remember spending most of my time doing washouts for people. Then the next year, I think it was 2012, the next year, was that 2012 or 2013? I can't remember which one of them. But I remember it was a really poor start to the season as well. And then I remember I went back to Scotland actually on holiday, and it pretty much didn't stop raining from July onwards. And then that was the record crop up until the last couple of years was 2012. So that, I guess that's the thing. Like, it can still turn around if the rains come.
No,
fingers crossed, touch wood.
You know, it's not a drought, you know. It's because the season hasn't broken. We get a drought every year. We're unlike the eastern states. We don't get summer rain, unless, of course, you're up in the Kimberley. But, you know, we are the full raw Mediterranean climate in South Australia stuff. You know, it's hot, dry summers, cool, wet winters, Mediterranean. And, you know, most of our growing season happens in winter. Something weird's happened since sort of the 80s, late 70s, where we're getting more and more, get a couple of inches of summer rainfall, a couple of, you know, cyclones come through, give a bit of soil moisture. We got better at harvesting that and going in dry. Chemicals allowing us to do that. So look, it, you know, if it hasn't, you know, in a month's time, 25th of May, it we haven't had a couple of inches, then yeah, that'll get a bit interesting. So what's happened is the high rainfall area, which is, hasn't had that summer rainfall.
Yeah.
We haven't had summer rainfall, not unusual. Didn't have the big cyclones this year. Couple of big thunderstorms, but on quite isolated areas. So it's not a drought. Also, the WA, again, different to the eastern states, we get these big millennial droughts, the centenary drought. We go for 3, 4, 5 years, we don't get them. Yeah. It's all over in a year. You get smashed. That's why, you know, they back into it full bore. They punt again. You can't afford not to anyway. But so, look, there will be somewhere in Western Australia, in the Southwest Land Division, that gets a decile one or decile two. It won't be the whole of the wheat belt, Great Southern, Southwest corner, but it's somewhere every year.
Yeah.
And
it's such a big area.
Well, yeah. Again, a drive. Yeah. Well, it's at 1,400 k's, you know, from Esperance. You go 200 k's towards Adelaide. From Esperance, 176, 430 or something k's, and you follow the fence line, 1,800 k's to the very top, and that's a lot of wheat growing, 18 million hectares of cleared land. There ain't many farmers out there anymore. Average size of the average program along that fence line is nearly 10,000 hectares. Big operations, and they just deal with it when it's dry. Not that the Esperance people really know what dry means, but the southern ones, the seven gum guys do. But look, it's drought. Get used to it. What we don't want is governments buggering up markets, let us handle the drought, keep the interest rates low, keep the international markets open, keep the competition working domestically for domestic buyers, and we won't give you any problems.
Sounded like a true economist, Trevor.
We don't need the handouts, but just don't kind of get in our way by disrupting a market that's working fine.
It's just, you know, it was just an insane policy dropped out by Labor to what? You know, end live exports. And of course, you know, the first thing is once sheep go, cattle are next, except that the federal government doesn't want to talk about cattle because they've got a whole bunch of marginal seats that they need to win in Queensland and New South Wales. And then as they found out in 2011, Gillard, that the Indo export, live export ban, what swung that around is when you've got, 80 Indigenous-owned stations fronting up to Parliament House with some elders going, what are you doing? And they had no answers to talking to Aboriginal and pastoral landholders saying, you know, we need that trade because there is no other market for northern cattle. So they don't want to go to cattle. And if you look at the stats really carefully, really, really carefully, the cattle mortality numbers take out the few big incidents of sheep things with sheep ones went wrong, are actually worse than sheep. So the argument is you're going to ban sheep, you ban cattle. And then what's next? You know, you have to go after racehorses and
long distance transport within Australia.
Yeah,
across the crazy. Yeah. So tell us, actually, you did mention about the dry farmer, because I read your stuff when it comes out. And I think you're too hard on yourself. Like, I think very thought-provoking.
I've written, so every week, WA farmers, like New South Wales, Victorian, you know, farmer, peak bodies, we've got about a third of the wheat belt as our membership, which is about right. It's about the same as the other states.
Yep.
You get a third interest in supporting agri politics. You get a third complete disinterested, and I think the politicians are there to do the job. And you've got a third who, because the grandfather, you know, didn't get a, we didn't support the superphosphate bounty in 1972 or something, or the dairy quota, they've got the shits on us and refuse to join, even they've forgotten why they don't like us. But that's okay. So I've been CEO the last 5 years, and you're trying to get people engaged. It's hard to get people engaged. And the one thing that people do read is the Farm Weekly. And every state's got their equivalent of the Farm Weekly land or whatever. And we looked at the magazine carefully. WA Farmers used to own it back in its glory days. It is read by 94% of farm decision makers for 104 minutes a week. It used to sit, you know, in the back of the Holden Ute up in the little alcove. You could sit there or sit on the dash and you'd read it at smoko or lunch or whatever. And everyone starts at the back and sees what properties are for sale, and then goes to the front, see who's got their picture in the paper. And then you go through, look at secondhand machinery and, Toyota advertises Land Cruiser, God knows why, but John Deere advertises tractors, God knows why, but obviously tells you it's the go-to paper. You look for, other than watching, listening to episode 3, you go to the market reports on, you know, how little you're going to get for your sheep and cattle.
I'm pretty sure we write one of them on a weekly basis for the Farm Weekly.
We're here.
So if you're not listening, you can catch us there as well.
That's where you're everywhere and anywhere. I try to be everywhere and anywhere, other than the odd time I get invited onto a podcast. So we buy a page, and I fill the page, so a couple thousand words, and I sit there with my keyboard and bash away. But I did economics and politics and history at uni, and I'm a bit passionate in that. And I write on a whole range of topics. I write on what we should do about country towns, or you know, what ministers should do themselves to stop annoying us.
So is the term the dry farmer a reference to your sense of humour, the fact that you've written it before you've had a little tipple, or just the season as it is now?
I like the tipple one. There used to be a modest farmer, for those who read Bert Kelly's article in the 60s and 70s, showing how old I am. What a junkie for media I am. I used to read it in the school library. He wrote in the Fin Review. He was an ex-farmer and a politician, and he campaigned for 15 years to get rid of agri-socialism, all the statutory marketing support mechanisms and all the quotas and tariffs. So he wrote many articles, and he titled it The Modest Farmer. And there's a couple of other farmers who've written A View from the Ridge, some others. So look, I give it a title, and when I put it out on social media, it's just under my tag in the COWA Farmers. But I look for topical issues, and I have a crack at them. Stuff that our 1300 politicians, state and federal across Australia, won't tackle. Indigenous-owned pastoral stations, why can't they be sold? That wound some people up. Why is there so many senior women being promoted in government departments at an accelerated rate, starting with DPA, Department of Agriculture, over here? That upset a few people. Should state governments be doing more for biosecurity and doing less for research? What's their ultimate responsibility?
Does that mean you've added influencer to your long list of titles, Trevor?
Certainly, I don't think I influence anyone. I'm just a commentator. I get a lot of feedback. People like to read it. I say what politicians are usually, you know, their party system won't allow them to say. And, you know, deliberately poking the bear. So previous State Minister of Agriculture was completely hung up on regenerative agriculture. Oh, and I took great delight in questioning endlessly what regenerative agriculture is. And I said, just give us a scientific term. And she spent $20, $30 million supporting it. And it was hippie rubbish, you know.
But this is where it comes back to. It's just that keeping government out of markets. If that's the right model for agriculture, agriculture will do that.
It'll survive.
It'll work out itself.
Yeah, that's right. It's a whole carbon farming thing. You put a price in front of it big enough, you'll get out of the road. You'll be bowled over in the rush. we can happily replant Australia's cleared landscape over the next 25 years and become like Singapore, and we'll just import all our food, and then we can bulldoze it all over again and bury the trees or stack the trees up, and we'll have saved the planet and become a native food importer. But let the market do its thing. Yeah. Like people saying, jumping sideways, we need to have food security. Politicians talk about food security and go, well, what's your version of food security? You know, mine's Wagyu and red wine, and, you know,
Matt's is chicken.
Truffles and Chardonnay. Beans. Yours might be a bowl of mealy maize every once a day. So, you know, you don't need, you know, the only thing you need for food security is
calorie.
Well, no, it's gold. Gold in the bank.
Yeah, money.
You know,
yeah.
Gold, money. And usually a half decent defence force and a heap of, because if you can't get it here, being an island continent, then you're probably stuffed. So then that jumps you into the topic which I've written about, which is we don't need food security, we need, you know, fuel security. And because we've only got, we average between 20 and 30 days of diesel in Australia, we should have 90 days. And so I wrote about where's the best place to put it? Well, on farmers' farms. Why? Because we already store and handle diesel. So you could, I hate subsidies, but if you really wanted for defence purposes, tell every farmer to double their storage for diesel and keep 6 months' supply.
Yeah, not a bad idea. I've actually considered that as well. We speak to a lot of corporate farms who are doing that for their own use.
Just because,
because they don't want the pricing volatility. If the price is low, they want to stock up. And secondly, if there is any interruptions, they don't want to be stuck with out being able to plant a crop.
Yeah, so I'm seeing big farmers with big sheds buying their fertilizer and the bulk of their chemicals, you know, well before the start of the season, 6 months out.
Which I think is good.
It's
good strategic.
Yeah, well, it's just a matter of time in this just-in-time world we live in. Did we learn nothing from COVID? Have we learned nothing from Houthis throwing a few missiles around or drones around in Yemen? It's easy to shut parts.
Trevor, we never learn.
No,
that's the problem.
We don't. We want cheap stuff.
If we learned, you wouldn't need people like us, you know, kind of explaining what's going on because, you know, everyone would be on top of it.
Well, if we learnt, you wouldn't need government to give handouts during droughts, would you? You know, in Australia, what, we haven't come across a drought before?
Nah,
we haven't seen low stock prices before. We haven't seen high feed prices. We were talking before we came on air about when I was chief of staff during the 10-11 drought, and that was a thumping, very big drought across here. And the industry fronted up with their handout. What's the government going to do? And the minister was an ex-pastoralist and been through many droughts, and he said, nothing, I'm going to give you nothing. And that was the end of the conversation. The unfortunate thing is the premier stepped in and he offered, he said, we've got to give him something. So he offered $25,000 as a grant for any farmer who had to walk off. Well, of course, no farmers walked off because the banks had well and truly tightened up their lending criteria years before. So no one's going to be taking the greyhound to Perth. And of course, what's the biggest solution to drought? It's the huge, that since then, the huge growth in land values and the equity reserves that are out there. So don't know whether too many people really need the big commercial farmers, $5,000 grants, but I'm sure they'll all fill in the form.
Well, that's the thing. It's like you said before, it's the smaller scale farmers that are the ones that are most impacted.
Well, the big ones will use it to upgrade when they fly to Japan to go skiing. So
the next thing, the WOF conference.
End of June. And in fact, your honourable gentleman will be there supporting us as you are almost every year.
I heard that we're getting an award for lifetime achievement. We should actually get an award. I reckon we've probably presented at the WOF conference more than anyone else.
I'm jotting down madly. The gongs.
I'm not sure if they have as much prestige if you ask for it, Andrew. You think they're better when they're just granted without request?
I think it was Manti Julie that said something along the lines of, if you don't ask, you don't get.
That's true as well.
Or maybe the opposite.
What's the old saying that you give accolades to the useless, you promote the incompetent, you give awards to the non-achievers or something like that?
I don't care. I just want something on my wall.
We'll swap awards, Hobby. I'll get one from being in a episode 3 podcast, third time or fourth time or fifth or whatever it is.
Yep.
Everyone's a winner.
Everyone's a winner. Well, that's the whole thing. That's what we want.
Good lyric for a song there, Trevor.
Oh, well, you guys are good. Well, you challenge your guests to do the word association. I might challenge you. You do quite good singing at the conference. If those who can make it their way to the WA Farmers Conference, we'll get Andrew and Matt to bring out the guitar, the banjo.
Yep.
And you can sing the rains if the rains haven't come or haven't come enough.
The rain dance.
Yeah.
We'll be happy with that.
But we're looking forward. Like we are looking forward to it because like you said, we've been to it.
Quite a few.
I reckon I've been to nearly everyone. Since 2011.
Yeah, just put your names on. You usually give us the brutal bad news, which is the rains are not coming, and the markets are the markets, and they're not going to save you. So
come on, mate! Don't tell everybody what we're going to be saying. we'll make.
I've worked out your formula.
That's fine. We'll mix it up this year. We'll lie.
Lie.
things are looking good.
you'd be in line to become a politician.
We'll say something flamboyant.
Just make a promise. What is it saying? Promise the world, deliver an atlas.
There you go.
Anyway.
Could be an election campaign by then.
Well, I could be running.
So it's August, July, August, September, federal, if they go early, our federal government. And then we'll be right into the US.
That's what's going to be the interesting one, I think.
We need you guys to give us a rundown. If Trump wins, what's going to happen for the next 4 years on US agricultural policy? And trade policy
is going to be the big one.
Are we going to do a rerun of picking a fight with China? And what happens to Australia?
Australia.
It didn't go well for us last time. We're only just recovering from it now in some markets.
Well, barley's only just come back, and we think that was down to Trump.
Yeah, because the more we're forced to align with the US on their strategic policy, and so we should, the more the Chinese will. Pick and potentially use this as an example of how not to behave. So New Zealand's, kowtows and, we've done it in the past. If you don't, barley, who else paid a penalty? Rock lobster certainly did.
Yep.
Some meat processors.
Wine.
Wood.
Beef.
Yeah.
Timber.
Timber.
Yeah.
So we looked back at it in 2017, 2018, when China had the deal with Trump to say that we had to, China had to buy $35 billion or so worth of ag products from the US.
Yeah.
We looked at all the products that they could take away from Australia and then redirect to the USA. and more than half of them, like the big key ticket ones that had some value, all had some form of influence over the next sort of 24 months to sort of 48 months. Things like barley, beef, lobsters, timber, and something else. I can't remember what the other one was.
Wine.
They were all ones that China could turn around and say, actually, we're going to buy it from the US instead of Australia. So then there was some form of action against them. So we were pretty clear on that one. And there's a few other ones like skins. Skins was a big one.
Right.
So
So it was hard. It's hard to imagine Trump won't run the same, you know, make America great, you know, make things in America as you know, policy line again. It seemed to work for him last time. And it's hard to see that Xi Jinping, you know, with the pressures of Taiwan, domestic market, domestic economy, you know, you push the, it's easier to point internationally, and you know, we won't relive the Trump era, and who says we won't suffer what we've gone through before? And then again, you've got the Europeans, and their policies are around trade and protectionism hasn't gone away. Same pressures.
It's going to be an interesting. I reckon the next 5 years is going to be an extremely interesting period for history. There's going to be so much occurring.
300 missiles dropping on Israel from Iran. If people haven't worked out, that's not a game changer. they've got they're living in a lovely little bubble, but
the one that we don't really talk about that much. Well, we talk about it, but like Ukraine and Russia, it's still ongoing, and it looks like Ukraine is probably. I would imagine Ukraine is eventually going to lose.
Well, I think they've lost.
The funding's gone. The money's gone.
Well, even with the $60 billion they've just got, they're down 12 million people. They're churning their way. They're running out of people, and you need skilled people.
Yeah.
They made almost no advance in the last 12 months. In fact, they've gone backwards.
They're going backwards now.
They've gone backwards. They're going broke. They'll have a change of government and do a deal.
And then you've got that. I always wonder if that will mean that sort of China looks at that and says, well, the West's not going to do anything, so let's just go for Taiwan.
Yeah, the problem with Taiwan's 170 kilometres of water and some very large cliffs. We've had Anzac Day the other day.
And a lot of missiles. Rerun.
That's right. The things that we don't have, missiles and drones, I can guarantee the Taiwanese are building them at the rate of knots. But that doesn't. You know, you're talking about autocratic dictatorships, Russia and China, and if you read enough history, they all end up picking a fight with their neighbours, and most of the leadership ends up, you know, if they don't, they end up against the wall. So you've got two major nuclear powers who are major grain growers, food consumers, trading partners, trading competitors of Australia. They are front and centre of our geostrategic trade future.
And that's,
I reckon, if you...
I was going to say something there, but like, Trevor, you always like to put your thought pieces out. I put a thought piece out yesterday on when Russia wins the war and how it will lead to an OPEC of grains. You're going to have an OPEC of wheat where Russia effectively controls, you know, nearly 40% of the world's wheat trade. And that, I don't know if that was a good thing for the world in general. It could be good for grain farmers, to be fair. It could pump up grain pricing. But I think that's the result, unintended consequence of them winning will be, and maybe not unnamed, but it'll be a Russia in control of the vast majority of the world's grain.
I'm just wondering, you know, as Ukraine's going down the tube, if they decide to start lobbing missiles at grain ships going through the Black Sea, and for short term, what a massive shock to the system that could happen, could have. So, you know, over this grain growing season, we could see, what did you just released it, the price of wheat just jumped, what, $25 just the other day?
Yeah, $35,
Big $35. Jump. So, you know, there's always, but there is volatility this time of the year, but Well, as we've seen, it doesn't take, we haven't seen with the hay price in WA and the lupin price, having sold lupins this time last year for $300, you wouldn't buy them back under 520 if you could find them. You know, it doesn't take much of a shock to the system before supply and demand gets out of whack, as you gentlemen well know. And, you know, things change fundamentally. We saw that in sheep prices. Before I came back to the farm to do a bit of part-time farming, I nearly bought 2,000 five-year-old ewes at $240 each. That was 2 years ago. Luckily, I didn't, because they'd be worth nothing. They were worth nothing within 8 months. And same as when the sheep industry in WA turns, I reckon it's going to turn big time. Interesting. Mm. What do you guys think? But the exodus of sheep, the percentage of farmers, the agronomists in WA are telling me the percentage of one agronomist has got 80 clients, 50%, 40% of them still got sheep. He said half of them will quit their sheep as soon as they can and the price blips up. So the exodus out of sheep will continue, and those that are staying are getting big and a lot bigger. But the price turn, when it does turn, I think will turn rapidly and overnight. But
well, it's your thoughts? It's about specialization, isn't it?
Mm.
Like those who are good continue and stay and become better. Like the better ones stay, effectively. That's just what happens in any sort of marketplace. So less supply generally equals higher price. As long as it's enough to continue to fund or continue to have enough throughput for the processing.
Yeah, it's the supply chain that's the issue.
I can't see the supply. I'm talking out of air here. Matt probably know more about it because he's the red meat ambassador or something like that. But I can't imagine the number of sheep declining below the processing capacity in Western Australia.
I think it will. The confidence will go out. The cropping guys per hectare have made more money year in, year out, even in the high rainfall zones for the last 25 years. Hard to get labour over here. Nice driving a nice big John Deere, Case, New Holland, whatever. You take live exports out of the equation in WA, no one's going to invest big time in new processing facilities. Yeah. So what do? Crop the lot.
I guess that
ends up. Ends up going the same pathway you saw in Queensland, really. Yeah, look at the sheep industry in Queensland. It's a shadow of its former self.
Yeah, well, so same as it is here. So
I reckon, Trevor, these are good topics for a panel at the W Farmers Conference.
Well, for those listeners in WA or anyone over east, come to our conference and you might be surprised sitting up wearing a whole bunch of medals on the panel. A couple of experts on markets.
And what date is it? It's the 18th, 19th?
It's 21st, I think. 24th,
21st. 26th, 24th, 25th or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of June.
Yep.
End of June. Yeah. End of June.
Well, we're going to have to end it there, Trevor.
Mm-hmm.
It's been insightful as always.
Covered
a few topics.
Global tour.
And Trevor, like we've always enjoyed talking to you because you're always very good with a glass of wine. The discussions have always flown really easily, and there's not many topics you can't talk about, Trevor.
They start politically incorrect and they get a lot worse. So, but I blame you two. Egg me on, so I'm just an innocent participant.
Well, that's all that years of psychology we've been doing.
That's it.
We must pencil in another late night session for.
What we might do, Trevor, is we might we've got microphones now. I don't know how to work. We've got a mobile microphone that we can plug into a phone. So we can maybe do me, Matt, you, and John.
We could have what is it? The after hours X-rated version.
I was going to say 11:30 p.m.
That'll get me. No video.
Yeah, no video needed. All wanted.
Righto, Trevor.
Right.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking the time, and we'll chat soon.
Cheers, mate. As always. See you when you got nothing on.